Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is A.B. Dawji and this is The Big Picture, the program in which we do not discriminate against any politician. We clap all of them equally. The program in which we look very carefully in the dal to see if there is any kala in there. And if there is, then we fish it out and put it under the microscope to see what it's up to. That's the program, The Big Picture. Okay. Let's look at some of the weird and wonderful and even sad stories that didn't make it into the headlines. Stories that didn't make it into the headlines. Here's the first one. Well, as you all know, there is a chicken pox outbreak in South Africa, especially here in the schools in Durban and so on. Now, there is a fellow by the name of Massimiliano Fedriga. He is a big shot politician in a party known as the League Party of Italy. Mr. Fedriga is a strong opponent of vaccination, something which is compulsory in Italy against 12 diseases, including chickenpox. Now, legislation was passed in the parliament after an outbreak of chickenpox in 2017. The law says that unvaccinated children cannot attend nursery or preschool, and heavy fines are imposed on parents who fail to get their children vaccinated. So our man, Massimiliano Fedriga, has been an outspoken critic of vaccination. He called the government Stalinist for imposing such a law. So guess what happened to this laddu? That's right, he got chickenpox and spent 4 days in hospital. That, my dear listeners, is known as poet justice. So this character, Massimiliano Fedriga, he was against vaccination and then he got chicken pox. Actually, my secretary, Ilham, her daughter has got chicken pox. And my granddaughter went home and announced that Ilham's daughter has been eating too much of chicken pox and she got sick. And now to something of a sad story. Sad story. Supreet Kaur is a 28-year-old news anchor on a regional TV news channel known as IBC 24 in India. And while she was reading the news, a breaking news item came on about an accident. And Supreet, the newsreader, crossed over to the reporter at the scene of the accident and heard that 3 people died and several were severely injured. And then she learned that one of the persons who died in that accident was her husband. Supreet continued reporting the live news segment even after she knew that her husband had been involved. Once the cameras were off, she became very emotional. She called her relatives and rushed to the scene of the accident. Supreet and her husband, Harshad Kawade, had been married for just about a year. And people praised her for her true professionalism under extreme circumstances. And now to a weird story. But first, someone asked me this question. What is the definition of mixed feelings? What is the definition of mixed feelings? And the answer is seeing your mother-in-law going over a cliff in your new Mercedes-Benz. Ah, that's so cruel, eh? So, when I read this article, I really didn't know whether to feel cross at a first-class chore or feel sorry for him. And this happened in Hong Kong. A woman by the name of Lee was at an ATM. She was about to deposit her money Well, here's what the article says. As she held her 2,500 yuan, that is $400, in hand, a man approached her from behind. He had a small knife in hand. Lee said to Guangdong News, "When I saw him walking over, I knew, I subconsciously knew he's going to rob me. When I saw him, I felt really afraid." The man's identity was not given in the report. Lee immediately panicked and held the money out to him. She handed it over to him without hesitation. And then she says, "And then I screamed. At the time, I felt, as long as you don't hurt me, I'll give you the money." The robber pocketed the money, but he wasn't done. According to the report, he demanded that Lee give him the rest of the money from her account. As he stood behind her, he shoved her while making his demands and pointed at her phone, telling her not to call anyone. After she entered her PIN, he was given a surprise. Lee had no money in her account. The man then laughed and took the money out of his pocket. He handed it back to Lee, then turned away and walked away with a smile on his face. Lee's hands trembled as she held her cash while she watched him leave. After the man left, Lee called the police and reported the man. The police said on the news report that after the man was arrested, he expressed his reason for robbing Lee. He was out stealing money for a child at his home who is still in school. The money would also be used to pay for a family member's medical surgery. The man said that when he realized she had too little money, he gave the money back in an attempt to encourage her to not call the police. So what do you make of that, eh? A chorwan with a soft heart, would you get angry with him? Mixed feelings, eh? Mercedes over the cliff. Okay, now let's get to the heavy stuff. Heavy stuff. Dear listeners, I'm now going to engage in some very serious rambling. One may describe it as a stream of consciousness in the style of the literary giants James Joyce and Virginia Woolf. Are you impressed by my profoundly intellectual discourse, eh? No? Okay then. The bullies may refer to it as Lavaro. But that won't stop me, I tell you. And the topic, dear friends, is democracy. Yes, I told you it's a heavy subject. Don't go away. Hey, just wait there. Democracy. This is how Winston Churchill described it. He said, "No one..." Let me just put my Winston Churchill accent. "No one pretends that democracy is perfect or all wise. Indeed, it has been said that democracy is the worst form of government except all those other forms that have been tried from time to time." Did you get that? Right. So what's my view on democracy? I'm talking about Western style democracy. Sure, that's a huge topic, ne? Okay, let me start here and put it very simply. In most Western style democracies, you have the party that is elected to be the government and the party that is in opposition. What I would like to see is that both parties must be almost equally matched, like when two teams play soccer. It's interesting when they're almost equally matched. Now, what I mean by that is that the ruling party must not be too powerful, must not win elections by a landslide. You know the old expression, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely? So, to put it very simply, the ruling party won the elections by, say, 55% of the vote, and the opposition, they get 45%. Of course, in reality, they are all smaller parties and so on, so the percentages are different. But let's say we have two parties, and this is how they won. But my point is that no ruling party must be so hugely powerful, getting a massive, overwhelming vote maybe by a landslide margin. Let me give you an example. But first, here's a question sent in by my dear friend Yunus from Kilani, Johannesburg. Hey, that's a sharp fellow. That's a sharp fellow. He gives them sticks on other national radio stations, especially when Muslims are being demonized. A real radio jihadist. That's Yunus. Okay, so here's the question that he raised, and it's quite a cryptic one. How come that it will be the first time in history that Britain will see the end of May before the end of April? How come that it will be the first time in history that Britain will see the end of May before the end of April? Do you have the answer to that? Come on, it's quite easy. And the answer is British Prime Minister Theresa May may resign in the next few days, so she may go before the end of April. Ah, you got it now, eh? Well, this Yunus fellow is a sharp like a menorah and all, as we say so eloquently here in Durban. So, there is a likelihood that there could be a call for elections in the UK over this thing called Brexit. Don't ask me to unpack that topic, Brexit. You know, the tiny little island just can't get its act together. Talking about Britain here. And it's dominating all the headlines. Put the news on and it's Brexit this and Brexit that and Britain. Well, Britain is exiting from the European Union. That's what it's all about. Britain exiting from the European Union. Anyway, as I said, it looks like there could be elections in the UK anytime soon. And there's a great possibility that the Conservative Party of Theresa May will be voted out of power for making such a mess. And the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn will come in as the new ruling party. You see, I like that. I like that. You mess up, out you go. Same situation with the United States. You have the Republican Party. You have the Republican Party there. And you have the Democratic Party. At the last election, one didn't quite know who will win. It was a very tight race. It was a very tight race. And as it turned out, the Republicans got the majority in their parliament. It's called the U.S. Congress. Actually, it's a little more complicated. The Congress is made up of the Senate and the House of Representatives. It's got two parts, in other words. So when Trump came in, the Republicans had control of both houses. They had control of both houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives. But in November, there were elections for the Senate, and the Democrats took control of that house. Are you still with me, eh? You sure? Okay. Anyway, both houses are very powerful. So what happened is that Trump tried, who of course is a Republican, he tried to get about $6 billion from the national budget to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. And the Democrats said, no. Well, actually, they said, no way, Jose. Hasta la vista, baby. It made President Pagla very cross. So he threw his toys out of the cot. He shut down the government for a few weeks. So, to cut to the chase, the bottom line is this. The Democratic Party, which is in the opposition, is powerful enough to stop the president from doing whatever he wants to. And again, if he messes up, if the economy takes a dive, then he and the Republican Party could be out at the next elections. Follow the history of the United States and Britain, and you will see that there is no certainty that at election time, the ruling party will come back. Someday. Stop sleeping, okay? George Bush was a Republican. he was replaced by Obama, a Democrat. Same story in Britain. You had Margaret Thatcher of the Conservative Party as Prime Minister. Then came John Major, also of the Conservative Party. And he was replaced by Tony Blair of the Labour Party. See what I mean? No one party is so powerful that it stays stuck in there as the government forever and ever. People have confidence in you, they vote for you. If they lose confidence, they vote you out. So you're always on your toes if you're the governing party. Make sure that you perform well, service delivery, no corruption and so on. I call it a vibrant democracy. Vibrant, exciting, unpredictable, dynamic. A changing situation. Like when you come home and you expect dal gosa on Friday and surprise, surprise, it's chicken biryani. What is it that you Joe Burgers say? Dal chawal or something like that. Anyway, you get the point, eh? No one is sitting comfortably, simply with an overwhelming majority, or very snugly with an overwhelming majority. No one. Now, I don't want to dissect this democracy thing too much because it can take the whole day, the whole day. But one important point is that the electorate, that means the voters, must be well educated about what the political parties have to offer. The word is well educated, well informed, because, you know what, let's face it, politicians, especially at election time, will promise you everything, more jobs, more money, and improved economy, no crime, and so on. You know the whole story. Election time, a politician will go around shaking hands and kissing babies. What a nice fellow, eh? What a nice fellow when you see him kissing babies. He will say things like, you know what? I am a man of principle. I am a man of principle. That's right. I am a man of principle. And if you don't like my principles, I've got a whole lot of other ones also. So a well-informed electorate voting community will see right through the bull and will make a well-informed choice. Well-informed electorate will make a well-informed. Sadly, no matter how much of information there is out there, lots of debates, lots of sharp questioning of politicians, they still the result where people make the wrong decision. Take Brexit, for example. There was a huge referendum. People were asked, do you want Britain to leave the European Union? And the result was a big yes. When things started unfolding, then suddenly people sat up and realized that they really didn't know the issue all that well when they voted. Many said that if there was another referendum, they would now vote no. See what I mean? Are you still there? Stop behaving like you are bored, okay? So, let's come home to good old South Africa. What was that saying in the old days? Bright flays, sunny skies, and Chevrolet. Hey, bright flays, sunny skies, and Chevrolet, eh? Sure. With the price of meat today, there are not too many weekend brides. And Chevrolet has left South Africa. And so, dear friends, the country is in election mode. Exciting, eh? And the big question is, who to vote for? Who to vote? Me? Well, I really don't know too much about politics. But I think I'll definitely vote for Raj Bansi, my hero! Haven't seen him on posters anytime recently. Eh? So, let's take a look at the major parties. Who will you choose? What about the party that liberated us from apartheid, the ANC? Well, as we all know, the ANC has three very serious problems. Number one, corruption. Number two, corruption. Number three, corruption. You know, almost every day we hear of Chorwans at the top, draining, running away with millions and even billions. The Zondo Commission is a real eye-opener. This week, Angelo Agresi, the whistleblower, said that his company, Bosasa, gave the ANC top six of the ANC around 12 million rand bakshish. It also came out that Hambapozi's son, Cyril Hambapozi, his son collected 2 million rands for some sort of consulting work he did for Bosasa. Every day we hear some new startling revelation about politicians getting brown paper packets filled with lekker falus. It appears that Bosasa was getting lekker tenders. The big one was the catering contract for correctional services, that's the prisons department, worth millions of rands. So Bosasa catered for the prisoners and catered for the big shot politicians also. Every day, new revelations every day. The question is, what will we hear Gusasa about Bosasa? What are we going to hear Gusasa about Bosasa? Shocking stuff. Okay, so what else is shocking? The ANC's list, the list of people who will go to parliament has been released. They will go to parliament after the elections. On the list are alleged big-time chorwans. But wait, Ace Magashule, the big boy, what is he? I think he's the Secretary General of the party. He said, hey, wait, eh? Just wait. You can't just say that someone should not be on the list because of certain accusations, certain allegations. One is innocent until proven guilty. Lovely stuff, isn't it? Except that, well, after the elections, and these guys accused of corruption are all in parliament collecting nice, big, hefty salaries, and court proceedings open, the charges are laid, court proceedings, the cases can carry on and on and on for a very long time, maybe even years, because if these characters have got dirty money, loads of falus, millions, they could get top lawyers to drag the cases out. Here is what former politicians have to say. ANC stalwart and member of the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation board, Cheryl Carolus, has called on South Africans to help prevent compromised individuals who appear on the ANC list from going to parliament. Her call was backed by former Public Enterprises Minister Barbara Hogan during a remembrance ceremony for the late former struggle hero Ahmed Kathrada at West Park Cemetery in Johannesburg. Carolus said the foundation would up the ante to stop comrades of, in her words, of Smalyana, Smalanyana skeletons and frozen chickens from getting into parliament. The term, Smalanyana skeletons is also associated with Minister Batabile Dlamini, while the Zondo Commission recently heard how Minister Nomvula Mokonyane accepted frozen chickens from Bosasa to do its bidding in government. Carola said, we must take a clear stand to say that this thing of innocent until proven guilty is nonsense. When the list gets published, we as the foundation in our private capacities will try to shine a spotlight on those sotsies who try to steal the soul of this country for their own narrow interests. Carola said this was to help the administration of President Cyril Ramaphosa clean up, saying expecting him to do it alone would be unfair. Hogan echoed Carolus, saying Ramaphosa and the ANC's progressive forces need the country's help to usher in a real new dawn. She said it is shocking to have people on lists who have lied to the Constitutional Court and yet still would, without shame, say innocent until proven guilty. There's a time when people must be called out and told that this is unacceptable, it is not good for our country, it is not good for you and your family, and therefore step aside and allow this country to grow. There you are, echoing exactly what the whole country feels. You know what? Tuma Mina, send me with a lacquer shambok, and I will clean out all the chorwans from Parliament. But you know what? I feel that we are getting such a bombardment of news about corruption every single day. Every single day, no exaggeration. I open the papers, you check the news. Almost every single day there's something about corruption. There's so much of bombardment about this that we are not shocked anymore. We are numbed, almost unmoved. Yeah, almost unmoved, numbed. But you know what moves us? You know what moves us? Here you are doing some very serious work, maybe cooking in the kitchen or working on your computer, and suddenly the lights go off. That's when you are moved. You are moved to say, oh, sheesh, man. What the hell? Posasa is far away from our minds. Lights out hits you directly. Oh, no, not again, man. That's when you get fed up. You really get fed up. You get angry with the government. This government is useless. The government is corrupt. This government only knows how to steal and so on and so on. You get fed up when the lights go off. Do you know what load shedding means? Hey, do you know what load shedding means? It means vote shedding. Load shedding is vote shedding. The ANC will lose votes. As many see Eskom as being horribly mismanaged, meaning theft and corruption. And right out of the woodwork, right out of the woodwork, who popped up to throw some light on the subject? Yes, folks, none other than our man, Yaqub Bhai. That's right, our man, Yaqub Bhai. Jacob Zuma, that's him. The savior of South Africa. The savior of South Africa. He emerged to say that if the nuclear deal that he was busy trying to finalize with the Russians in his last days as president, if it was allowed to go through, we wouldn't have load shedding today. You know, I really laughed when I read this comment in the column in the Sunday Times by Hogarth. This is what he wrote last Sunday. Let me see if I can find the article. I thought it was really funny. Right, it says here, Babaka Duduzani, the father of Duduzani, refuses to go away. The Inkandla Kruna, he's always singing, gave an interview to our sister publication Business Day in which he claimed we would not have had power cuts if we had bought into his trillion rand nuclear deal with the Russians. Well, first, it was a corrupt deal. Second, the nuclear power stations would not yet have been built. Third, we'd be in a whole lot of debt. It's like saying that there would be no hunger if the government bought a KFC franchise that would only start to supply chicken in 10 years' time. That is putting it very succinctly. Okay, let's move on to the EFF. I told you, we cup everybody equally. Yes, I must confess, as I often do, that I voted for the EFF in the last elections because I saw them as shaking things up. That's right. I saw them as shaking things up. Well, since then, they have really been shaking things up. More like an earthquake. Many see the EFF as a very aggressive party, hitting out strongly. Many view it as being racist. This week, Julius was acquitted of the charge of hate speech, but the subtitle was that, yes, technically, he could not be charged with promoting hate speech, but his utterances do not bode well. They are not good for nation building and harmonious race relations. In fact, I would go further and say that he is just like Trump. His comments are like a dog whistle. Now, I explained that previously, just as the dog only hears the whistle and comes running, nobody, no human can hear that. in the same way Trump said things, bad things about Muslims, not directly calling them a menace, right? But the collective result of his various comments inspired people to feel a great deal of hatred towards Muslims to such a dangerous level that many were inspired to go out and kill. So while some can say that, you know what, I did not tell anyone to go out and kill or to use violence against Muslims, yet the hidden messages in his speeches was that Muslims are bad. Therefore, his message was irresponsible and dangerous. So therefore, I would suggest that the rhetoric from the EFF could also prove to be dangerous. Some people could be inspired to respond violently towards those that they view as a problem for this country. Not good at all. And you know what? Good heavens. We have enough problems already. The big one recently is xenophobia. Xenophobia. Just in the past week, a whole lot, right here in Durban, a whole lot of people from Malawi and Zimbabwe and Congo had to flee for their lives. They had to leave their shacks which were looted. Right, so we don't want this kind of loose talk. Right, and now to the DAs, the Democratic Alliance. Well, the majority of the listeners of this radio station have two problems with the DA. One is the Palestine-Israel issue. The feeling is that the DA supports Israel against the Palestinians. Second is the perception that the DA is against Muslims because its members, leaders, object to the building of masajid in certain areas. So basically, these are the two issues, concerns, that keep Muslims away from the DA. Many Muslims. Well, some argue like this. Palestine is far away. What real difference does it make to Israel whether the DA supports Israel or not? Its support is insignificant to Israel. Israel gets the support of the big countries like the United States and Britain and most of Europe and India and many in South America, more and more in South America, in fact. Number two, the ANC has huge trade dealings with Israel and the government has full diplomatic relations with Israel. Number three, perhaps we should look at how effectively the DA runs the areas that it controls. Yes, there is occasional corruption, but this cannot be compared with the industrial scale of corruption within the ANC. So this message is that we should look at local issues and what is good for South Africa instead of focusing on a place far away, meaning Palestine. So there you are, some of the arguments, some of the rebuffs. And I heard one chap say something that was, I would say a little thought-provoking. He said, hey, you know what? Those who support Israel are in the top structure of the DA. I think he was obliquely alluding to the whites in the DA. And so he says that they decide policy as far as Israel is concerned. So why don't Muslims all join the DA in large numbers and then change the policy from within by sheer numbers? You stay out, you can change nothing. You get in and you can do something. So you get the point. I wouldn't say that I support or don't support. I will think about that one. There you are. Good arguments for and against joining the DA. So dear listeners, this is just my superficial, off-the-cuff, rambling perspective of the forthcoming election, also described as the silly season. The silly season, election time. Well, as I told you, I'm voting for my man, the Raj, the bigwig of politics. Right. Let's move on, and we have a few minutes left. Now, if I told you this, you know what? I'll break your legs and bust your face if you say that I'm a violent person. Hey, maybe if I told you that. You know what? I'll break your legs and bust your face if you say that I'm a violent person. Isn't that proving the point that you are objecting to? You're actually proving the point that you are a violent person. Well, I mentioned last week that this very brave lady, Ilhan Omar, raised certain very awkward questions. She said that the pro-Israel lobbies in America were controlling America's policy regarding the Palestine-Israeli issue. In other words, they're supporting Israel 100%. Right? These lobbies have got the politicians captured. She also said that the top U.S. politicians had dual loyalties, meaning that they were equally loyal to America and to Israel. Wow. What happened next was that the people she accused came down like a ton of bricks on her. But the biggest attacks came from top politicians, including the leader of her own party, the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi, who also lined up, all of them, whole lot of people lined up, top politicians, to speak at the huge convention, the huge conference held this week by the leading pro-Israeli lobby in the United States, known as AIPAC. AIPAC. Each one of them stood up there and said that Ilhan Omar was wrong to say what she said, and that they supported Israel 100%. Ilhan did say that they were getting large donations, Benjamins, she called them, Benjamins, from pro-Israel groups. In fact, I have a list of all these donations that the politicians have been. It's not a secret. It's not a secret. All these things that she said is something that is well known but never spoken about. Anyway, their performance at this convention in support of Israel was so passionate that it actually proved the point that Ilhan was making. You know what? Israel is tiny. Check the world map. It's barely a dot, eh? Amongst all the countries. I don't know how many countries there are in the world, but wow, these politicians will do anything to protect Israel. Yes, it's tiny, but the power of the lobbies and the money is huge. And they say that she is an anti-Semite, anti-Jew, in other words, for criticizing Israel. You know, by the same token, if I criticize the Saudi government, which I do often, does that make me anti-Muslim? You see how silly such an argument is? And guess what? A large number of Jewish people in America support Ilhan. I'm talking about Jewish people. So labels are used to try to silence people. Ilhan is called anti-Semite. And Jews who support her are labeled self-hating Jews. Marvelous, isn't it? Right, let's finish it off very quickly here. We had... let me just say that Israel can do anything. It has the full support of America. And especially this new president, the Pagla Donald Trump. The moment he came into office, what did he do? He canceled the nuclear deal with Iran that Obama put together painstakingly. Why? Because Netanyahu hated it. So Trump canceled it. What's the next thing he did? He recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Now that is historic. No president dared go anywhere near that subject of declaring Jerusalem the capital of Israel. And then now he announced this week that the Golan Heights are part of Syria, which Israel captured in 1967 in a war. It captured it. Syria didn't attack Israel. There is enough evidence. I think I produced that last week, where the Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan actually admitted that we actually started it by sending a tractor into the Golan Heights area of Syria. And when the Syrian soldiers did nothing, we went deeper into Syrian territory. And the moment that the Syrian soldiers fired on the tractor, that's when we went in and we started this war and we captured the whole of the Golan Heights. That was the story that came out. So why is Trump doing this? Well, he's playing to the gallery. The gallery meaning the place where he gets the strong support from. that is the Zionists out there, very powerful, and the evangelicals, those who also support. In fact, when he read out these things, when he read out his declaration that he will be recognizing the Golan Heights as being part of Israel, right behind him stood four or five top people, Zionists and evangelical, of which his vice president, Mike Pence. Mike Pence actually said, you know, I think that God has sent Donald Trump in order to support Israel. That was his statement. So that's it, an evangelical. Now, as I said, Netanyahu can do anything. Just this week he bombed Gaza because some rockets were fired into Israel. So there was quite widespread bombardment of Gaza. And you know the weekly demonstrations at the fence. So far 194 people have been killed, 41 of them children, 29,000 wounded, and the world can do nothing because these people, whether it's journalists, whether it is medical personnel and children, they are all terrorists. They are regarded as terrorists. So watch out for this one. Today is a very big day because thousands of people will be lining up at the border fence in commemoration of these demonstrations that have been taking place, the anniversary of the demonstration. So it's huge, massive amount of people will be coming there. They're probably there already, and let's see what is going to happen. Don't forget, elections are coming up in April, on the 9th of April in Israel, and the electorate, the voters expect Netanyahu to act decisively, hit a decisive blow. So I feel very sad that many, many more people will be shot by these snipers with high-powered weapons. Leave you on that very sad note. Make dua for these people. So, light at the end of the tunnel. Well, I've got nothing else except from the light at the end of the tunnel graveyard. Light at the end of the tunnel graveyard. What have I dug up there? Well, two Christian guys were lost in the desert. For days and days they walked. No food, no water. They were finished. Just when they thought that there was no hope, suddenly they saw a small village. As they approached it, right, this was in the desert, in somewhere in the Middle East, Arab country. As they approached it, they saw the masjid. It was Zohar time, and it was full of people. The one guy, by the name of Paul, he said, you know, I got an idea. Let's tell them that we are Muslims, and they will help us. But his friend John was not too keen on the idea. Now, as they arrived at the masjid, the people crowded around these two very haggard-looking guys. The imam came up. Paul said to the imam, Salam alaikum, my name is Muhammad. We have been in the desert for 1 week now and very happy now to be in your village. Right? John was a good Christian and refused to lie. And he said, good morning, my name is John and I'm a Christian. The imam clapped his hands. Musallis, bring food and bread and fruit and cool drinks for our friend John. And to you, brother Muhammad, Ramadan Mubarak. Come, join us for Salah. Well, there you are, Habibi. Have a nice week, inshallah. From the big picture, this is A.B. Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.